Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Cry of the Soul, How Our Emotions Reveal Our Deepest Questions About God, by Dr. Dan B. Allender and Dr. Tremper Longman III, narrated by Tom Parks. Forward, before you begin. I don't get it. I just don't understand God. It was a comment I'd heard one other time from my coworker, Greg. Maybe the long drive to our workshop had gotten to him, with a still longer freeway ahead. I watched him from my wheelchair behind the driver's seat. Something told me he'd be more comfortable by a trout stream today than leading a disability workshop. Greg is divorced, and every once in a while the wound can seep, like this afternoon. He has one hand on the wheel while stretching with the other to feed banana and crackers to his son. Ryan is his beautiful 10-year-old boy with the happy smile that makes you forget he's intellectually disabled, incontinent, and, except for his giggles or occasional shrieks, can't put two words together in a sentence. I look at Greg and Ryan and try to picture the wife and mother on the scene, holding Ryan on her lap. She'd be cooing in his ear and have the banana neatly peeled and sliced in a Tupperware. And she'd wipe that banana mush from his face. I recall that Greg is diabetic when he tosses the banana peel and reaches for his insulin kit with his free hand. Prick finger. Watch freeway. Swig sugary apple juice. Eye on Ryan. Hey, big boy. Greg wipes his mouth and smiles at his son, who dazzles us with his grin. Greg is as driven as he drives. His hamster wheel days seem to be filled with tackling one dizzying problem after another. Then there's his 13-year-old daughter, Kelsey, fascinated with her newfound appeal to boys. We won't even go there. Sundays are the hardest. Like last week after church, when Greg and the kids bumped into their mother in a drugstore. Kelsey, Ryan, and Mommy became a bundle of hugs. Greg wished he could be part of the bundle, but it was the usual awkwardness. Niceties were exchanged, and then it was time to move on. Screams and tears erupted from Ryan as they parted company. That Sunday closed out with a speeding ticket, going 50 in a 35-mile-per-hour zone. He stared vacantly at the policeman. He didn't care. The freeway still stretches in front of us, and so we drive on in silence. Finally, Greg sighs. Ryan, with those scars on his face from falling down, he leans over and touches his son, who was a sleeping angel on the passenger seat. I love the way he stumbles and trips his way to me whenever I come to pick him up. But I don't get why God allows so much pain in his life, my life. I can't bear it any longer, his voice trails. I just don't get it. I don't get it either, I want to say. I don't get why Greg and his ex-wife can't be a real family. Greg loves his children. When I met their mother a few weeks ago, she was as loving and caring. I want to grab them both and say, things aren't that bad. Love and goodness should triumph here. But it's a world of irreconcilable differences, an ex-world. Like some weird divorce between God and his world that should never have happened. Most people live this way. I don't mean that most are divorced or the single parents of disabled kids. I mean that the situations we find ourselves in often don't get better. Problems don't always get solved. Greg and his former wife probably won't remarry. It is doubtful Ryan will experience a miracle of healing. And when life feels like nothing more than shuffling one foot in front of the other, it can shake your faith. Most of the time, we are able to manage, like jugglers spinning plates on long sticks. And if things feel overwhelming, we try to deal with it in a heart-to-heart talk with a friend, or we keep a journal and vent our frustrations on paper. We soak in the tub, sweat on the treadmill, splurge on a new dress, or get away to the mountains on the weekend. We smile and say we are trusting in God, but down deep we know it's a lie. We're only trusting that He doesn't load us up with more plates. But often He does. This is what happened to Greg and his wife. Too many hurts unresolved, too many failures at communicating. And when Ryan arrived on the scene, it made things worse. When pressures began to mount, they felt God was off somewhere tending to the needs of more obedient saints. With God feeling so distant, it choked faith out of them both. Greg's story may be a script not unlike yours. When pain lumbers through the front door, squats down in the middle of your life and makes itself at home day after day, year after year, it can make you choke. It can make you angry at God. I've felt that way. When quadriplegia ambushed my life, it felt as though God were smashing me underfoot like a cigarette butt. Chronic pain on top of quadriplegia became the extra plate I could not handle, and my anger turned into deep despair. Those were nights I would thrash my head on my pillow, hoping to break it at some higher level and end my misery. Those were the mornings I refused to get out of bed. I told my sister, Jay, "Just close the drapes, turn out the light and shut the door, leave me alone." Finally, after almost a year, I realized I couldn't face one more day of hopelessness. I cried out in anguish, "God, if I can't die, please show me how to live." It was the prayer God was waiting for. After that, I would ask Jay to get me up, push me to the living room, and park my wheelchair in front of the music stand that held my Bible. Holding a mouth stick, I would flip this way and that, looking for answers, any answer. I would eventually learn, mainly through the Book of Psalms, that God has His reasons. Even when it involves extra plates that make your world come crashing down. Yet our anger does not surprise or fluster Him. He knows all about it. It was God's rage that nailed the Son of God to the cross. He gets anger. He wrote the book on it. And He invites people like you and me, to come and air our grievances and complaints to Him. And the good news is, you can do so without weakening your faith. You can do so and be all the better for it. Sound impossible? Far from it, friend. Because with the book you are listening to, you have stumbled upon the best of guides. I should know. I first read The Cry of the Soul decades ago, when I was still sorting through a lot of hurt and frustration connected with my quadriplegia. Yes, I read it on that music stand holding a mouth stick. The Cry of the Soul showed me what to do with my anger and hurt. Not stuff it under the carpet of my conscience or minimize it, but actually do something good with it. As I followed the Spirit's leading in chapter after chapter, as I meditated on the scriptures, the author's insights, and set myself on a course of action, my pain, frustration, and anger dissipated. It went away. Just like that. That's what a lively abiding in the Book of Psalms can miraculously do, not to mention a fuller understanding of the character of God, as well as anger. And I owe much to Dan Allender and Tremper Longman for their take on all. If your plates are spinning out of control, if you are crying, "God, I can't live this way," then please know that you have a companion ready to step in. Comfort and consolation are about to be poured into your bruised heart, for you are safe and protected by what you will discover in the Cry of the Soul. All is not lost, for your faith can and will recover. Just as my friend Greg, just as I, experienced when we made the Book of Psalms our meat and drink, so make Dan Allender and Tremper Longman your friends on this journey. These gifted men are true sages when it comes to solid, practical counseling. Let them guide you. Let God's Spirit guide you, for hope is about to break on your horizon. Johnny Erickson Tada, Spring 2015. Introduction. When I, Dan, was 10 years old, I recall visiting the town of a favorite TV Western. I was crushed. The buildings that had looked so real on TV were, in real life, nothing but a facade with boards holding up the fake front. The empty space behind the facade pierced the illusion that the show was real. I suppose I knew it was just a show, yet nevertheless, it was a shock. I never watched that show again with the same interest or enthusiasm. The cover of this book indicates that it is about emotion. But is it simply another facade that hides the appearance of real help? Why another book on emotions, you might be tempted to ask. Isn't enough enough? We want to take you behind the cover of this book and let you see the bare boards that prop up our words. Not to suggest the same effect of disillusionment and cynicism, but to invite you to consider the essential convictions that drive our writing. Emotion is usually provoked by horizontal relational encounters. Someone treats me badly, and I feel angry or hurt. We do not differ with this assumption, but we go further. Every emotion, though horizontally provoked, nevertheless reflects something about the vertical dimension, our relationship with God. This book explores what our difficult emotional struggles say about our relationship with God. And every emotion, including those we often view as negative, reveals something about the heart of God. Here are the core convictions that structure our approach in this book. 1. It is our conviction that emotions are not amoral. They vocalize the inner working of our souls and are as tainted as any other portion of our personality. Many observers presume that emotions are neither right nor wrong. They simply are. Proponents of this view are concerned that once we say an emotion is right or wrong, it makes it more difficult for us to feel them honestly. Most people work hard not to feel what is unpleasant. We pretend, we deny, we distort. The concern of those who ascribe moral neutrality to emotions seems to be, if we make emotions a matter of right and wrong, then we will work that much harder to avoid feeling. The route out of this dilemma, therefore, is to make emotions morally neutral or judgment-free. For example, a dark emotion such as anger is neither right nor wrong. It's what we do with anger that is either constructive or destructive. But this view assumes that part of our personality is free from the effects of the fall, because it presumes that our emotions escaped taint or perversion. They are essentially pure and good. Part of understanding difficult emotions, however, is comprehending why we avoid them. The reason we don't want to feel is that feeling exposes the tragedy of our world and the darkness of our hearts. No wonder we don't want to feel. Feelings expose the illusion that life is safe, good, and predictable. The route to facing what we feel is not by devaluing the darkness of what we feel, but by valuing the deep structure of why we don't want to feel. Once we face why feeling is so hard, then we can move beyond what we feel to the deeper energy within us that keeps us from grappling honestly with our emotions. Then we will not only feel more deeply, but more importantly, we will feel our feelings in a way that exposes our struggle with God. One warning. Although we focus heavily on emotion, that orientation must never be considered the key to or core of growing in maturity. It is only one important element among many issues related to growing in Christ-likeness, not the indispensable cornerstone to knowing God. 2. The reason for looking inside is not to effect direct change of negative emotions to positive emotions. Instead, we are to listen to and ponder what we feel in order to be moved to the far deeper issue of what our hearts are doing with God and others. It's foolish to assume that we can directly alter our emotions simply by willing them to change. If you're angry, it's absurd for me to say to you, "Don't be angry," and then expect that you can simply switch to feeling kind or happy. It is also a mistake simply to work at overcoming a troublesome emotion through behavioral techniques. This is not to say that it's wrong to pray for release from rage or envy. It's inadequate, however, to assume that we can change our emotions by applying a few methods to gain handles on our troublesome inner world. Struggling with emotions is not a matter of solving problems with a little more information and practical know-how. We are not machines that can be repaired through a series of steps. We are relational beings who are transformed by the mystery of relationship. We are radically disposed to idolatry, illusion-making, and attempts to secure our lives without bowing before God. Our core problem is not a lack of information. It is flight and rebellion. Therefore, if we view difficult emotions as problems to be solved, we will end up looking for answers that will work rather than pursuing relationship with God, regardless of immediate outcome. A determination to resolve our emotional struggles inevitably subordinates God as a servant of our healing rather than a person to be praised. Rather than focusing on trying to change our emotions, we are wiser first to listen to them. They are a voice that can tell us how we are dealing with a fallen world, hurtful people, and a quizzical God who seldom seems to be or do what we expect of him. Although emotions are generally aroused in a human context, they always reveal something about how we are dealing with God. The revelation of reality, outside of us and within us, opens the door to wrestling with God. Encounter with God not only changes our emotions, more importantly, it has the potential to change our hearts. It's important to realize that every emotion involves a complex interplay between body and heart. We do not merely experience anger in our minds. We feel it in our bodies. The same is true for fear, jealousy, despair, contempt, and shame. Therefore, it is dangerous to presume that all emotional struggles can be changed by a strictly spiritual encounter. For some, a deep spiritual encounter will include embracing biological weakness. Certain emotions, especially anxiety and depression, involve physiological components that can often be treated with medication and other biological intervention. Ignoring the importance of the body involves a tragic misunderstanding about what it means to pursue God. It is a terrible wrong to place extra burdens on those who suffer profound emotional battles by suggesting that all they need to do is to work out their issues with God to make their struggles go away. It is equally wrong to suggest that it is unspiritual or a second-best compromise to seek physiological help. This issue is not a black and white, either-or option. The biological dimension of emotion is a complex factor which we are not ignoring. However, due to the specific approach we have taken in this book, we will not address this issue directly. Our focus on pondering what we feel might lead some listeners to conclude that we are encouraging a self-directed introspection. This is not our intention in any respect. Self-absorbed preoccupation with our inner world runs contrary to spiritual maturity. Excessive introspection can lead to a false sense of independence by giving us the illusion that we can exert control over our lives and become the masters of our fate. This path too easily leads to arrogance or confusion. We encourage honest inward examination for the purpose of gaining wisdom, not only to explore the question, what's going on here, but even more, to respond to what we discover as we ask, what am I doing with God? 3. Our guide for this pilgrimage of revelation is the Psalms. Perhaps no section of Scripture more poignantly exposes the inner world of our heart and more vividly reveals the emotional life of God than the Psalms. The Psalms were composed in poetic form. Poetry reaches to the realm beyond the world of sight and sound to reveal what our senses long to see and hear. It is the language not so much of the sublime, but of the truly real, a reality that cannot be grasped through scientific or theoretical precision. Theological propositions are necessary for understanding truth, but truth is ultimately relational, and relationship is the domain of poetry. Poetry is God's invitation to glimpse the unseen, His very character. We focus primarily on what have been called the Psalms of Disorientation. This type of psalm captures the struggle of the heart as the poet attempts to grasp the goodness of God in light of the heartache of life. We will also allow the poetry of the Psalms to move us into the divine imagery used by the prophets, Paul and Jesus Christ, as we explore Scripture's invitation to taste the mystery of God's goodness. 4. All emotions, including the darker ones, give us a glimpse of the character of God. This is the heart of our book. Far more important than the way in which emotions reveal the movement of the heart is the way in which our most difficult emotions, anger, fear, jealousy, despair, contempt, and shame, uniquely reveal something about the heart of God. Our positive emotions, of course, joy, peace, pleasure, and others, have equal potential to teach us about the nature of God. But the darker struggles with emotion can point us to priceless glimpses of God's character through scriptural revelation of God's own emotions. Oddly, so very oddly, God chooses to reveal His heart through the tainted reality of our sinful inner world. For example, He allows the psalmist to portray his anger in terms of a drunk who has just awakened with a hangover and is unleashing his rage. Psalm 78, verse 65. What are we to learn about God through this startling picture? Does it imply that God is somehow sinful? Of course not. It implies that He reveals His heart through the multifaceted images in His Word that draw from our life experience. Language that speaks of God in what we would consider negative emotional terms reveals the mysterious humility of God. He speaks to us in ways that are sometimes shocking, disruptive, and highly charged. Why such an apparently negative focus in this book on anger, fear, jealousy, despair, contempt, and shame? In part, it is an attempt to show these emotions as far more positive and necessary to life than we normally assume. But even more important, it is an effort to open our vision to perceive the unusual heart of God. God feels anger, fear, jealousy, despair, contempt, and shame. And all of these emotions reveal something about His character. Most gloriously, each one points to the scandalous wonder of the cross. The journey into our difficult emotions will reveal something about the awesome nature of the sacrifice of the eternal Son on our behalf. Ultimately, it will lead us to worship. Chapter 1. Emotions, the Cry of the Soul. Our emotions connect our inner world to the ups and downs of life. Sometimes the connection is more than we can bear. A woman whose husband had been fired grimaced as she told me what had happened. I asked her how she felt. Although her face began to contort in pain, she calmly stated, "I'm irritated that he was used for 24 years and then dropped to save on health care costs. He's 54. Where is he going to find a job now? How am I going to keep him strong? It isn't fair." Her voice choked back confusion, anger, and fear. I knew something about this woman's life. She was pleasant, but determined. Her withdrawn, somewhat depressed husband did his duty each day and returned home to receive his orders for the evening. They lived a dull, conventional life that morally approximated the gospel. Now his job loss had opened the door to struggles in the marriage that they might have avoided by allowing their daily routines to distract them from the emptiness and distance in their lives. Her grimace was the first acknowledgement that heartache was near. The heartache was over loss, job, security, prestige. But the deeper loss centered on dreams that had lain buried since the first years of their marriage. She had entered marriage with the hope that she had found a place of rest, an opportunity to let down and relax without fear. She had dreamed of the kind of intimacy that would allow her to enjoy her femininity. But gradually, those dreams were sold for the security of a stable marriage and college education for her children. Now, even the payoff for her sacrifice was unraveling. The thought crossed my mind, she'll survive. Why open the door to anything more? If she opened her heart to feel, she would battle with far more than finances. She would face her decaying marriage. She would grapple with questions she never had the courage to ask about her husband, herself, and God. Riding the ups and downs of emotion. Emotion links our internal and external worlds. To be aware of what we feel can open us to questions we would rather ignore. For many of us, that is precisely why it is easier not to feel. But a failure to feel leaves us barren and distant from God and others. We often seem caught between extremes of feeling too much or not enough. Emotions are like the wind, full of mystery. They come and go suddenly, often leaving havoc and debris in their wake. Our destructive feelings in particular can seem like independent, capricious forces that are confusing and out of control. A mature professional woman recently told me, "Everyone who knows me would say I am stable, in control, and happy. Normally I am. But every now and then, some insignificant event will trigger a torrent of rage that is not only excessive, but irrational. Other times, when I hear a friend is going through a tough time, I feel so sad that it can haunt me for days." I know the words torrent and haunt are strong. I don't feel that way often, but when I do, there are no other words to describe my feelings. Emotions seem to be one of the least reliable, yet most influential forces that guide our lives. Some days, we feel great. Confidence and good tidings glide us into the new day. We tackle difficult tasks and succeed. Other days, we might experience a downswing in emotion that we can't explain and are helpless to change. We spend a great deal of energy trying to ride the crest above the churning undertow of emotion.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?